And the same for Obama and George W. Bush, the criminal invader of Iraq, and Clinton. They get used to it, partly because under the law of standing, the citizens can't take the government to court for such lawlessness. They're considered not having standing to sue, an ancient doctrine that has long outlived its usefulness from medieval England. So that leaves only the Attorney General. Well, the Attorney General was chosen by the president, not likely to sue the president. So we have a situation now coming up where we have a lawless president. We have a court system that allows him to be lawless with impunity. They didn't define official conduct or policy, so he's going to proceed as if he can commit any crimes and not be prosecuted, commit any violations of federal statutes and not be held accountable. Then you have the rubber stamp Congress, which long ago gave up its constitutional supremacy and gave it to the president. It didn't want the responsibility, and now it's under Republican control, so it's even worse in terms of their refusal to hold Trump accountable. So what's left? Well, you have the million practicing lawyers. You have the bar. They're asleep at the switch. We've sent letters to state bar associations and the American Bar Association and said, look, you're the sentinels. You're the first responders. You're officers of the court. You stand against lawlessness. No real answer from the state bar associations, and a kind of vague reply from the American Bar Association. How about the media? Well, the media is very good about repeating Trump's lies and then rebutting them, but they still trumpet Trump's lies. You know, any civic leader who lied like that, they wouldn't get any coverage. Well, Trump gets his capital letters repeated from his tweets. They actually put capital letters. No one I know of is given that kind of privilege and attention. And the media has been weaker and weaker. I remember it was once said, if Time magazine ever came out against the Vietnam War and Lyndon Johnson, that would be it. Well, I mean, it's laughable now to assume that any of these columnists, editorials have any impact whatsoever, whether they're liberal or conservative. So what is left is what's called the black swan. That is, something may come that we don't anticipate. And the analogy is 2009, when one person started the Tea Party movement, and it grew to be 300,000 active people, according to the Washington Post, putting pressure on the Republican Party. And, you know, they were messianic. They wanted deregulation, tax cuts, bigger military budget, et cetera. And they would flood the town meetings by the Republican lawmakers and stand up and exclaim themselves and demand this and that. And they pretty much took over via the Freedom Caucus, so-called, in the House of Representatives, the Republican Party. They dumped a couple speakers. We need that on the progressive left. Is it likely to come? I keep looking for signs. Maybe you see signs, David. I don't see any signs. The followers of Bernie Sanders are disillusioned because Bernie didn't really know how to organize them after 2016, when I think he had his drive for presidency sabotaged by the Hillary Clinton forces inside the Democratic Party apparatchiks. However, what's interesting is that most progressive agendas, all the way from peace to tax reform to living wage to universal health insurance to cracking down on corporate crooks, they all have tremendous left-right support. 85% of people want higher taxes on the wealthy and the big corporations. That's a lot of conservative people. 85%. Huge percentages want a $15 minimum wage. It's now $7.25 at the federal level. Some states have raised it. a little. And if you talk about cracking down on corporate crooks, you're in the 90% area. But, you know, the Democrats are indentured to these corporate conflicted consulting firms that they've contracted out their campaign to. And these firms decide strategy tactics. They exclude citizen group input. We have tons of evidence on that. And they raise the money. So if they raise the money from the fat cats and the Democrats outraise the Republicans in the recent presidential election by a lot, where did it come from? Came from corporations. Came from commercial sources. So they deliberately do not adopt the Bernie Sanders agenda, which is a winning agenda, and it could have landslided the Republicans. That's the scene as I see it.
What are the possibilities for, call them progressive attorneys general, state courts, and scores of federal judges appointed by Biden to defend our civil liberties and the Constitution? Can they tie Trump up into legal knots?
Well, that is a good point. The state attorney generals, Democrats, they will mobilize and file suits. And there are quite a few federal judges, but you still have these circuit court of appeals that have a lot of Bush and Trump nominations sitting on them. And, of course, the Supreme Court has lost 6-3. So you can win at the district level, but, you know, they're going to appeal everything the way the lawyers for Trump appealed everything to get rid of the cases, the four indictments that he was subjected to. He basically got away with everything. It's just remarkable. I've semi-humorously have said he ought to teach a law school course. He's the world's expert on how to escape the law, how to be a successful fugitive from justice, both as a business executive, where he violated all kinds of laws, and as a president, where he violated all kinds of laws. You know, he used the White House for campaign events. That's a violation of criminal statute called the Hatch Act. Got away with that. He spent money on the wall that Congress deliberately refused to appropriate. He just shifted it from the educational school budget of the Pentagon. You know, they have schools for the soldiers and their personnel. He got away with it. Well, he said it himself in July 2019. He said publicly, quote, "With Article 2, I can do whatever I want as president," end quote. There you are, right there. Bruce Fein, a constitutional law expert, said that alone was an impeachable offense. Well, you know, Nancy Pelosi could have nailed them on several impeachment counts. She refused. She just used the Ukraine thing and then the January 6th, but she didn't use a lot of tabletop impeachment counts, literally refusing to enforce consumer health safety and economic protection laws. They swore to enforce, shutting down essentially the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, firing all kinds of civil servants and scientists. But there are a lot of others. We had John Larson put 12 impeachment counts in the congressional record in 2019, for anybody who's interested. And Nancy Pelosi only picked the Ukrainian so-called bribery issue, which isn't exactly a tabletop issue for American people. She didn't put the Republican head of the Senate on the defensive with numerous impeachment counts where he would have had to have public hearings. That would have been very embarrassing to him and to Trump. She let him off. And it's just another example of Democrats hitting singles instead of home runs, very, very meek, very passive in their assault.
Are you concerned about the Department of Government Efficiency led by Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy? And talk about Musk's overall influence on Trump.
Musk is the most fascinating big business executive in American history. Let's give him his due. Before he went off the rails, he broke the monopoly against electric cars by the auto industry successfully with Tesla. Nobody did that in decades. there were electric cars back in 1920. So you have to give him his due. Also, he's a brilliant, bold entrepreneur. I don't know where he finds such skilled people to manage SpaceX and other ventures that are extremely profitable. Starlink, he's got other companies, hundreds of billions of dollars worth, Wall Street estimates, before they go public in a year or two. So he's the richest man in the world, and he's got a highly inflated stock portfolio of Tesla, which is hugely overinflated because he's in the news all the time and he has a big fan club. Well, sometime earlier this year, he just went off the rails. He began tweeting like Trump, began lying like Trump, allied himself with Trump, and now he's appointed to this so-called department, but it's really going to be an advisory committee. And he cannot meet the conflict of interest rules legally and be part of that. And also his ally. They got too many conflicts of interest. So that's going to be a litigation, or it's going to be a subject of some action on Capitol Hill by the Democrats. Then he's talking about cutting $2 trillion. I mean, that's crazy. That's never going to happen. It'd be a revolution in this country. You cut the veterans' hospitals. You cut the Social Security benefits. You cut health and safety protection, transportation subsidies, all the corporate welfare. You know, what are you going to do, crack down on corporate crime, ripping off Medicare? You have a revolution of corporate crooks against them. So it's just a lot of talk. The press is not focusing intensively on, you want to cut $2 trillion? Well, are you going to cut hundreds of billions of dollars of corporate handouts, subsidies, giveaways, and bailouts? Let's have your own contracts, Elon. Let's put them on the public surface so we can examine how inefficient they are for the U.S. taxpayer.
You've long been an advocate of single-payer health care. The U.S., among the 10 most prosperous nations, has some of the worst health outcomes. 40% of all bankruptcies are directly attributed to health care. Talk about what happened in New York with the murder of the UnitedHealthcare CEO, Brian Thompson, and the response. The New York Times reports that the killing, quote, unleashed a torrent of morbid glee from patients and others who say they have had negative experiences with health insurance companies at some of the hardest times of their lives. Some of the comments were, thoughts and deductibles to the family. Another one said, unfortunately, my condolences are out of network. The dark commentary after Thompson's death highlighted the anger and frustration over the state of healthcare in America, where those with private insurance often find themselves in Kafkaesque tangles while seeking reimbursement for medical treatment and are often denied. We'll talk about this so-called system of health care in the United States.
Well, here's where we're at. Since the assassination of Mr. Thompson, there's been more press coverage about the denial of benefits, the denial of coverage by these extraordinarily profitable giant insurance companies like Humana, United Health Insurance, Cigna, Aetna, than there has been in the last 3 years. And there's more attention now on Medicare disadvantage, hollowing out traditional Medicare and corporatizing Medicare for the elderly with incredibly deceptive advertisements that people have seen in the last few weeks on TV and radio and in the mail. So what does that say? That says that act of violence focuses attention on what should have been attended to and legislated in terms of single payer, everybody in, nobody out, much more efficient, better outcomes, less anxiety, the way the single-payer system works in Canada and other Western countries that you alluded to. So this is the crisis of democracy that we're into, that this man who's alleged to have killed the chief executive of Giant United Health Insurance because apparently he had a bad experience with getting reimbursed or covering his back problem for which he had surgery. His motive, as far as we know, is that these insurance companies are killing people. It's called silent violence. If you arbitrarily and recklessly deny coverage or deny reimbursement, and as one of the nurses said in the New York Times piece, you watch people die in hospitals because they can't afford the health care that they're needed in their dire moments of affliction. And this nurse, emergency room nurse, said that she's seen far too many people die for that cause. So the silent violence of corporate greed and power over consumers and the medical profession produces deaths every day. In fact, there are studies showing that 100,000 people die in U.S. every year because they can't afford to get health insurance to get diagnosed and treated in time. That's 2,000 a week. There aren't many studies, but there's a lot of observation by doctors and nurses about what happens to people when companies like United Healthcare have prior authorization, which means they have some company doctors or nurses far away from the hospital or the clinic, second-guessing the doctors who want to prescribe a procedure or treatment, and under the health insurance policy of the patient, that is reverted back to approval or disapproval called prior authorization. It drives doctors up the wall. Well, you know, you can't cover everything. You can't compensate everything. There's some treatments that are off the wall. However, the power of these companies is such that they can make more profits in direct proportion to the number of people who they deny coverage to. And then you can appeal, and that's a huge procedural obstacle, by the way. But if you do appeal, 90% of these prior authorizations get reversed. But in the meantime, you know, people are sick. They're dying. They're hurting. So the appeals process is a very minor remedy in practice. We'll see whether this becomes a show trial for the shooter. And there's far more attention by the press in exposing these rackets. It's not that they haven't exposed them. They have, but they've gone nowhere with the state and federal lawmakers. They are in the pockets of the health insurance industry and the drug industry. The drug industry has more than one full-time lobbyist for every member of Congress. The consumers are lucky if they have five for the whole Congress.
On your radio hour, you recently did a program on AI, artificial intelligence. What are its promises, and more importantly, what are its dangers?
Its promises are in very traditional areas. They'll be able to predict the weather better. They'll be able to maybe diagnose certain patterns of illnesses better. But in the hands of ravaging giant corporations, it could be one of the menaces of all time. You associate artificial persons called corporations, which have heavy doses of immunity to begin with the use of artificial intelligence and algorithms, and you can create mayhem. You can create enormous fraud. You can control consumers. You can displace workers. You can mimic the pictures of politicians and scare them. You can invade all kinds of privacies. You can start messing around with young people who pick that stuff up and use it against one another, which is already beginning to happen. It's not regulated. It's not fully understood. It keeps mutating and metastasizing. It's one of the great issues of our planet as to whether we are going to automate the human being with these algorithms. While there's a lot of articles written about it, you're going to see more and more of the damage. You'll see more and more lawsuits, and you'll see more and more Republican and Democratic support in state legislatures and Congress to control it, even though they're very belated. They didn't understand it, and they let it emerge into the force that it has at the present time. But they're so afraid of it personally and politically being applied to them that you will have a bipartisan effort, I think, coming up to do something. But they don't really know how to regulate it, who to regulate it, where is it, what's it, who owns it, where is it in the world? See what I mean? It's what might be called, quote, beyond the effective limits of legal action, unquote, to take the words of the former dean of Harvard Law School, Roscoe Pound, when he was asked about regulating prohibition against the production and use of alcohol and how hard it was to keep it from becoming a profitable underworld marketplace. He said it might be, quote, beyond the effective limits of legal action, end quote. And if that's the case, Katie, bar the door, David. Katie, bar the door. But let's remember one thing. We have a constitution that starts and ends with we the people. Corporations, company, political parties, never mentioned. We are the sovereign power. We've given it up to the Congress. We can grab it back. We've given it up to the courts. We can grab it back. We can give it up to the executive branch. We can grab it back. It's in our hands. We are the majority. Congress is controlled significantly by 1,500 corporations that don't have one vote. We have all the votes. There is left-right support for all kinds of progressive agendas that I mentioned earlier, living wage, universal health insurance, cracking down on corporate crime, a decent tax system, cutting back on the bloated military budget and empire, funding public works and public services and communities throughout the country, educational facilities, on and on. Huge left-right support. It's in your hands, people, including people who listen to this program.
Ralph, in your incredibly busy life, do you ever have time to read poetry?
I've read all the poetry I have time to read many years ago.
There's one Langston Hughes poem that I'd like to read to you. It's called Dreams. Hold fast to dreams, for if dreams die, life is a broken-winged bird that cannot fly. Hold fast to dreams, for when dreams go, life is a barren field frozen with snow. Langston Hughes.
Beautiful.
What are your dreams?
That people incorporate in their daily lives engagement with a just society, from the local community to the world stage. We're being confronted by approaching omnicides, climate disruption, nuclear war, massive pandemics, mass spread of poverty, and elected dictatorships. And it's in the hands of the people, as it always has been throughout history. Whenever they have achieved justice and they ask, how did this happen? It starts with one or two people conversing with each other and moving to larger numbers of stalwart civic advocates.
In February, you're turning 91. What's ahead for Ralph Nader?
Well, more of the same. More of the same, David. Injustice never takes a holiday. They don't take weekends off. So it's incumbent on some of us to match them.
Thanks very much for your time. You were just listening to Ralph Nader. It's in the hands of the people. I talked with him in mid-December. A legendary figure, Ralph Nader has spent a lifetime fighting on behalf of ordinary people. Life magazine ranked him as one of the most influential Americans of this era. This program is produced by Alternative Radio, based in Boulder, Colorado. We're an independent nonprofit in our 39th year. We're supported solely by individuals just like you. We feature voices rarely heard in the corporate media, such as Peter Bennert, Roxanne Dunbar-Ortiz, Chris Hedges, and Arundhati Roy. And we have a series of programs with Ralph Nader. To access our complete audio and book catalog, just go to our website, alternativeradio.org. Again, our website where we are podcasting, alternativeradio.org. For copies of today's program, Ralph Nader, It's in the Hands of the People, and for Noam Chomsky's latest book, The Myth of American Idealism, call us 1-800-444-1977. That's 1-800-444-1977. Or online, our website, alternativeradio.org. That's alternativeradio.org. Printed transcripts, PDFs, and MP3s of this program are free of charge. Just call us, 1-800-444-1977. Series theme music is performed by the Kronos Quartet from Pieces of Africa. Special thanks to KGNU. Joe Ritchie is our general manager and editor. I'm David Barsamyan. Thank you for listening.